and it's love we talk about to the world.
WGXC 90.7 Acre.
Unhappy about something you heard on All Together Now? Or maybe you have a strong opinion about an issue. Energy, agriculture, the environment, the Common Core standards, or broadband access. Don't keep it to yourself. Call 518-291-9492 and leave a 3-minute message, and we'll play it on the air. Leave a 3-minute message, 518-291-9492, with your take for all you hear. Again, that number is 518-291-9492. To leave a 3-minute message that may be played on All Together Now. Thanks for getting involved in your local community.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Green, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
And good morning, and welcome to There Is a Bright Side Somewhere. This is Pastor Kim, your perpetual optimist. And I'm hearing a little bit of an echo in here. I don't know if you're hearing it out there, but listen, we're going to get this show going. And just want to welcome you to Wednesday morning at WGXC 90.7 FM Acre. And we are going to be dedicating our show today to the midterm elections. They're over. The much anticipated and in some places celebrated election returns are in. And so we're going to be talking about that. But before we go there, let us go here, because you know, if it is a bright side Wednesday, there's going to be some Mandisa somewhere.
Cafe Ole Latte Da. You do the Zumba, but I do not. Give me like half a marathon. I'll give you the gospel of St. John.
sunshine.
Man.
Amen. So, it is so good to be back again with you. And so here we are, the day after the midterm elections. And I got to give a shout out to, well, we're going to talk a little bit locally, then we're going to go a little bit nationally. So right now, I want to start right here at home and give a great big shout out to our incumbents who were reelected, our Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. Woo-woo! We're so happy about that. And our Assemblywoman Dee Dee Barrett also. Woo-woo-woo! We're so happy about that. And also, I want to shout out. Now, this woman also that I have had the pleasure to know and work with, she ran uncontested. So, you know, she didn't have to sweat this thing at all. But she has been our county clerk for, I don't know, for forever and ever. Amen. She's such a beautiful spirit and a beautiful woman inside and out. And she does so much for so many. And that's how come she ran uncontested. And she's also a programmer here on WGXC. And that is Miss Holly Tanner. So, woo-woo, we're so glad that you're going to continue to lead as our county representative, our county clerk. We're so happy about that. Really big shout out to Mr. Antonio Delgado. Wow, we are so excited. He came into the race into a field of, I don't know, maybe nine or dozen other potential candidates for the primaries, and he emerged victorious in the primaries to get the endorsement of the Democrat and a couple of other party lines and working families, I know, and I'm not sure about the others, but he unseated our current congressman, John Faso. So we do wish Mr. Faso well in his future endeavors. And we just celebrate Mr. Antonio Delgado and his family. He's a husband and father of two. He and his wife, he's from, this region, although some of the ads that came out during the campaign failed to acknowledge that. He moved away. He went to school. He did some work. He did some things. And he moved back into the area. And he realized that his experiences, his education, his qualifications made him ready to step up and to lead and to be part of our political process in a significant way. And so we are so grateful that so many people saw it that way, despite ads and misleading ads and misconstrued information. You know, that's what happens in politics in our nation. What you gonna do? But we're just so grateful that now in January he will be leading us, and I think I'm probably safe to say he may be the first Black American to hold that position. And so it just says a lot about our region and the people here, and that they really are moving beyond the politics of skin color and even the politics of gender, as as we have to just acknowledge and celebrate that so many women were in the race. You all are seeing the headlines and you all are, you know, watching the news broadcasts and talking heads and hearing their talking points. But we're going to just give our little take on it as well. I'm going to throw our voice in our opinions. And those are mine and mine alone, not the opinions of this station or its management. But we are going to talk about that a little bit. I have a guest coming in and he notified me he's running a little bit late. But he's no stranger to the WGXC family, the WGXC community. And that would be, God willing, he'll get here, Mr. Alan Skerritt. He is the former president of the NAACP here in Columbia County. And he has worn so many hats and had so many careers, so many lives in his journey during this earth. And he's going to come and share some of his viewpoints. Now, I'm going to put another disclaimer in there. And that is that neither one of us have political science degrees, but what we do have is experience and over I say between the two of us over a century. Yeah, I'm going to keep the numbers moderate. Over a century of adult life and adult experience and activism. And so we're going to come in and have a conversation, I do believe. It might just be me having a conversation, but hopefully he'll arrive and we'll have a dialogue, okay? Other people I want to recognize, and I'm like I said, I'm going to go into a more conversation, more of my insights and thoughts about things that happened last night. As we go through the hour. So I hope you'll stick with us and listen. And, you know, certainly I want to hear from you, your views as well. I want to acknowledge two women that I came to meet and one who I have often shared the platform speaking on various issues around our county. And she ran for the first time, Miss Joyce St. George. So I want to give a shout out to her and her team, who ran for a Senate seat, and also Miss Pat Strong, who I just recently met, and she had first time in as well, getting into the ring. And you know, beloved, we know that in any race, there's only going to be one person who emerges as the victor, or one team that emerges as the victor. But in most races in our sporting arenas or, you know, whatever, marathons, et cetera, and so forth, that doesn't mean because you didn't emerge the victor that you stopped training or you stopped running, you know. So we don't know what next big thing or big race they're getting ready for. But we do know that, well, I trust and hope that we will hear from them down the road. So there was a headline this morning that said, women lead a parade of victories to help the Democrats win. Women lead a parade of victories. That's kind of creative, thinking about all of the marches and that were held starting in 2016 by women. And now there is a procession of women going to the Hill. That's so exciting. We're gonna talk about that some more. But before we do, I want to play this song. It's sort of a theme. Tongue tying up here. But it's sort of a theme song from I think the 70s or somewhere like that. Some of you out there, my listeners and family members and friends, y'all remember this song from back in the day. This song was by a woman named Miss Helen Reddy. And Miss Miss Helen Reddy, with her bold self, said, "I am woman, hear me roar."
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore. And I know too much to go back and pretend. 'Cause I've heard it all before, and I've been down there on the floor. No one's ever gonna keep me down again. Whoa, yes, I'm wise, but it's wisdom for the pain. Yes, I paid the price, but look how much I gained. It only serves to make me more determined to achieve my final goal. And I come back even stronger, not a novice any longer, 'cause you deepen the conviction in my soul. Oh yes, I'm wise, but it's wisdom for the pain. Yes, I pay the price, but look how much I gain.
That is my shout out to all those women, warrior women who marched on out there, put their hats in the ring, took on the task, and are now heading up to the Capitol. We are, and locally too, right? And locally. So let's go back into all of that. So they said that there were 256 women who won primaries. 256 women who won primaries. There were 197 who were Democrats, 59 who were Republicans. And so out of that 256 women who won their primaries, here's how it breaks down for the history-making night for the presence of women in American politics. And let me just add in that when they get sworn in January of 2020, when they get sworn in January, they will have 2 years in before we get to 2020, or a year in before we get to 2020, when we celebrate 100 years that women have had even the right to vote. So I think that is just so significant. So here's the history-making night that women had and America had. Men had to vote too. And I shout out to you men who, you know, said, I'm going to look at the issues. I'm going to look at the candidates. I'm going to make a decision based on my best assessment of who might be the best person to go forward. And so shout out to all of you too. Women in politics made history here in America. We added 33 newly elected women to our Congress. We had diversity among the women who are added to Congress. We have our first Native American elected. I think her name is Miss Presley from Massachusetts. Now, and I'm going through this because there are some people, you know, they work late. They had the late night shift, the overnight shift. They didn't get to watch the news. They haven't, you know, been able to see a paper. They're getting up, they're getting into their day, and you just might be tuning in to Brightside, right? So you might hear it here first. That would be wonderful. And then there are those of you who, you know, in the car and, you know, you just happen to, you know, glance at one or two things. You went to sleep before all it all came in, and now you're in the car doing your thing, and so you're here listening. So I'm just happy. Hopefully, I might be the first to tell you some of this stuff. That would be amazing. So let me continue with my breakdown now. So we have two Muslim women. And I don't want to mess up names. Rashida Tlaib, I think, in Michigan. All right. Also Ian Omar. Oh, my goodness. How wonderful is that? And then we have, and I didn't get her name, but an African-American woman who took on six male incumbents. Hallelujah, in beat men in six, took on an incumbent, but beat six men in the primary, and she won as well. Arizona and Tennessee elected their first women senators. Fabulous. And we've heard a lot about this young woman, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from New York City. She's the youngest woman, I think even the youngest person ever elected to Congress. And the Georgia race, they say, is too close to call. And so they're looking, they had some districts that still needed to be counted. And I believe there might be an opportunity for a runoff by Ms. Stacey Abrams, who challenged the incumbent Brian Kemp. And that's just amazing in itself, that she did so well and may even take the governorship in Georgia. My goodness, look how far we have come. There are eight women who will be taking governor seats, and four of them are newly elected. Four are incumbents who have been reelected. And so that's just exciting. You know, when we went into the 2016 election cycle, I know people's memories still go back to there from time to time. And Mr. Trump, you know, put his hat into the ring in a very serious way, touting that he had no political experience and he had no political alliances or allegiances or indebtedness or whatever the case may be. I may not be using his words at all. But, you know, he said it was time for us to have people who are not, you know, born and bred and raised political. And that message seems to have been picked up on because we're looking at the candidacy of this election cycle. And we're seeing that the perception of what you needed to look like and sound like to be a politician or even to run in a race has just blown away. It's just blown away. And so we have a lot of diversity in this election cycle, which I think I'm going to pick up on that point in another minute. But there's a song that I'd like to introduce that part of the conversation with. Yes, I'm finding it. there it is. I've got it. All right. So this song that I want to play next is by Seven Time Down. And it says, God is on the move. Another one was I Know Who I Am. This here is God is on the Move. Listen up, y'all.
Anytime a heart turns from darkness to light, anytime temptation comes and someone stands to fight, anytime somebody lives to serve and not be served, I know. God is on the move. Sets men free. Anytime the choice is made to stand upon the word, a searching soul, and someone says, send me, here I go.
I see God on the move in all of this. So we're talking about the diversity that emerged in this election cycle. And, you know, for a couple of hundred years, up until 2008, we would say, all of our presidents were white men. And as we said, up until 98 years ago, the only people, only men had the right to vote. And certainly we know that we had to have in the 1960s civil rights and voting rights legislations passed to empower black people in this country to be able to have the right to vote as well. And so the pool of people that we see going into office as a result of last night's election results says to us that those who are going to be in decision-making, national decision-making positions, are starting to reflect the true diversity of our nation. And I think that is a great cause for celebration. Hopefully, you know, this is Pastor Kim, your perpetual optimist. And hopefully it will help people to be able to see that we are just one race. We are one race. So when we have people who are coming from a Muslim or indigenous people being at that table, I say God is on the move. So let me get down to the brass tacks of this, okay? So we had, like I said, 33 newly elected women going to Congress. Now, we have two races that were not called when I was putting all my little notes together and, you know, when I'm doing my research. We had two races that were not called yet, but in both of those races, it was women facing off against women. So whatever the result of that will be, we will have two more women added to the number, which will bring the number of women going to Congress to 100. And the previous record was 85 women in Congress in one time. And that was according to the Congressional Research Service, but the Rutgers Center for American Women and Politics said that the record was 84. So 85, 84. All right. So we gained about 15 seats to get to 100. But the thing of it is, and check this out. Okay. So historically, the record of women between Congress and Senate had been at 107. Okay, so when we seat in January, the total will be 112. Okay, so it's basically a net gain of 5. However, because we had 296 women in the primaries and winning them, and because we now have this big class of congresswomen going in, and also because we have a few more female senators going in, we have a net gain of 5, but it's still a big shakeup. It's still, I think, the potential to see a little estrogen come into the conversation and hopefully maybe give that mother wit, I want to say, mother's intuition, women's intuition, some of those other things, you know, to this table. We're going to see some more about this election cycle. Like we all know, it was historic. There were 32 contests around the country where women faced each other. And, you know, when I looked at that and I read that, I said, now, you know, that means that there were 32 contests around the country where either a woman faced off against a man or a man faced off against a man. But then when we think of the hundreds and hundreds of contests around the country where men have been facing off against men for, you know, a couple of centuries, then, you know, it's what? About time. It shouldn't be an oddity, is what I'm saying, if two women are facing off against each other, or novelty at, you know, but it is, and it's noteworthy. And we're glad that there were 32 contests around the country where women faced off for each other. We had the first openly gay governor elected in Colorado. Oh my, okay, Colorado. So I would have thought Colorado to be a more even conservative place, but they elected a gay man. All right. We had in governor races, we had 7 Democrats to pick up 7 seats. And I don't know the correct number for that, but I know when we were getting ready to go into this cycle, it was like, you know, 36 or more of the governorships belonged to Republicans. So there was some shift there. And we're excited about, you know, bringing some more balance to the governorships, because and the governorships are so important because each state is really like a mini country to itself. And in some states, each county is like a mini country to itself, right? So the governorships and the county leadership is really important. Those elections are very important. And here I got to give a shout out to Governor Cuomo, who was reelected for a third term. So a lot of people are saying, yes, you know, we like what you're doing and keep on, you know, improving and keep on making things better for us as New Yorkers. We're going to hold you to it. And the things that he didn't accomplish in those first two terms, you know, well, we're going to be there to help him make the decisions to accomplish those things that so many people are still looking for to happen. But here in New York, you know, there are some things that from the legislations that the governor presents and gets passed that whatever happens on a federal level, a national level, it's protected by our state laws and our state constitution. So governorships are important. And we commend all of those who won their elections in their governor races and those seven new Democrats who have taken on governorships. So in Colorado, Florida, Kansas, Minnesota, New York, Pennsylvania, Nevada, and Virginia, seats that were previously held by Republicans were taken by Democrats. Now, I don't have to break down on what seats there were, but there were some, there's something to analyze there. What happened? Why that happened? And then in Missouri and in Indiana, Republicans won seats that were held by Democrats. So in the state of Indiana, for example, all of the statewide offices are held by Republicans. And then when you get down into the New York City area, all of the statewide offices are held by Democrats. I mean, all of this is so exciting. I almost wish I had studied political science because it's really right now in the last several years, it's become extremely fascinating. You know, the rules of engagement, the rules are changing. And the demographic of the people who are coming into politics is changing, and people are not coming in trying to be all buttoned up and suited up and straight laced, but they're coming and they're telling their stories, you know, they're coming in with their personalities, and it's not a cookie cutter kind of a thing in the political domain these days. So that is just truly exciting for me. I think for a lot of us, when we look back in retrospect over this election cycle, and I know in those political science classes that'll be coming up, this election, the 2016 election, the 2018 midterm elections, will be part of the curriculum and the conversation in our colleges and universities. And so some of y'all should be taking notes now if you've been planning to go. And remember your first-hand account and first-hand remembrances of all of these things happening in our new cycles. All right, so I'm going to stay with this for a few minutes. I truly am. And hopefully Mr. Alan Skerritt is going to come in to join, because I was really looking forward to hearing his take on all of this. Let's see. There's a song that I want to cue up right now, and it's by Mr. Toby Mac, and it's called Everything. I see God in everything.
I'm captivated, I say it, I'm on a whole new intrigue. My space invaded, upgraded, I hear you talking to me. It's in the boom of the thunder, it's in the cool of the rain. And I'll say, I don't ever want to get away. Tonight is beautiful, it's got my mind on you. And
Everywhere I turn is a reminder.
You are listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM.
My soul's awakened, I'm taken by all the beauty you bring. You got it blaring, staring, love watching you do your thing. There's no mistaking your style, no mistaking your touch. I see the grand, I see the subtle of your love. Lord, I see you in everything.
Y'all, that was Mr. Toby Mac with Everything. And I woke up this morning with that song in my head, you know, like, I can see you in everything. I'm looking and thinking about the program today. I'm looking and thinking about the election results last night. And I'm just looking to see God in all of it. And right here, right now, is Mr. Alan Skerritt. Hello.
Good morning. To be afternoon.
Yes, soon to be. We're so glad that you made it. Aren't we out there? We are glad he made it. Now you don't have to keep hearing me ramble.
Yeah, you have two rambles. Rambles in stereo. Hey.
So, Mr. Alan Skerritt, as I said earlier at the top of the hour, you know, he is the former NAACP president here. He's we work together in championing other causes around our city and county, and we participated in a group called Hudson African American Leadership Alliance for a moment, HALA. And we worked to try and do a charter school, you know, and we worked to work on situations in the high school with suspensions and, yes. And all kind of thing. So we go back away. We go back away. So, you know, and we don't always agree, but we agree not to be disagreeable when we disagree.
Exactly.
And that's the way it should be.
I like to look at them as variables.
Yeah.
We have variables in our perceptions. That's
yes,
all.
Yes. So hopefully in the spring we're going to do a second program together.
Absolutely.
And he was, I think he just retired. You just retired from the Crossroad Rhythms.
Yeah, I've taken a kind of break. I really miss GXC and I miss doing my program. And when I think of my program, I have ideas, you know, and boy, I wish I was still on the air so I could kind of run that by the community and that kind of thing. But right now, it's me with you, Kim, and whatever we do, I'm down.
All right.
I'm down with you.
All right, so this is a little preview of what we have conceptualized. We just want to, and that program is going to be more talk. I mean, this is a lot of talk, too, but I try to throw music in there. But that one is just going to be talk. And so he's here. We're going to talk a little bit about this election. And I wanted to ask you, Alan, so, you know, I shared before you walked in that we had 100 women that are going to Congress. And we have 12 women who are going to the Senate. And historically, we've been at a place where we've had 107 women between Congress and Senate. Now, as of today, we've got 115. So we've gained about five. So the significance and the importance of this wave of women going in and this one time, such a large number, do you think it's going to have any impact, any effect?
Well, it really depends. I think it depends on the issues in which the women have been advocating for as their platform for election. And I mean, I was saying to you the other day, I believe that what I find interesting about the Democratic Party in particular, more than the Republican Party, is that in the plank of projects and ideals, you have people who support the environment and support the economy, but don't support the race issues. Then you have people who support the race issues, but don't care about the economy or the environment or the gender issues, etc. So we're still a bit split. And I think it's still to be determined exactly where these women who have been elected to offices and have been and will continue to hopefully run for offices stand on the total Democratic platform, and how much will their communities support, you know, their acceptance of the entire platform, or just support the environment and the economy and the gender issues and not the race, or vice versa. So I think one way or the other, they certainly are going to bring a new perspective, a new light to the Democratic ideals. I think the question now is to really challenge them about where they are individually coming from in their various communities.
Okay, so now let me ask you about this. I couldn't wait till you get for you to get here, because you know, this is the bright side somewhere, and I'm hoping we can find a bright side. I'm hoping we can help Mr. Mitch McConnell, actually. when I bring up this comment, this statement. All right, so I read that it said Mitch McConnell has shown little inclination, I think it was the Times article, I'm not remembering, but has shown little inclination to cooperate with Dems and is unlikely to do so without a nudge from Mr. Trump. And Mr. Trump may be in no mood to cooperate with Dems, because earlier this week, when he was responding to a reporter asking how will he react to Dems' demands if indeed there had been a blue wave, he says, "I don't care. They can do whatever they want, and I can do whatever I want." One headline read, "A partisan war awaits that just might suit Mr. Trump." And so I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, okay, I think if that is the undertone, because the Senate did get stronger, they expanded their control. And if Mr. McConnell has not shown in the past an inclination to work with Dems, with all of these women coming in and all of this diversity coming in, what could we say that might encourage Mr. McConnell to be more across the aisles, I guess?
Well, I don't know if I can say it here and now on the radio, what we could say to Mr. McConnell. I think the party has to look at where the majority of them going in the near future. And I think there's a contingency of quote-unquote moderate Republicans who are kind of seeing that there's been a coup that maybe many of them have not truly been a part of, but because of their political alliance to their party, have had to kind of go along with the program. But I don't know if they really were advocating, you know, the taking down of the Constitution amendments and other kinds of things. That seems to be what this far-right nationalism movement of Trump's is all about. And I think McConnell finds himself as maybe not where he totally wants to be, but is certainly a loyalist as far as the Republican Party is concerned. I think for people like McConnell and then other guy, you know...
Ryan?
No, well, Ryan's going to be running for president. That's for darn sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
we'll be.
Absolutely. Come on, he's like quitting politics. He resigned to begin to develop his campaign to mm-hmm. run against Trump in the primary mm-hmm. in 2 years. It's mm-hmm. that's my delusion anyway. this other guy in South Carolina with the big mouth, the tough guy. You know, he was McCain's buddy. People like him, I think, their followers mm-hmm. are slowly being phased out. And I think it may be the strength and the power of these new women leaders in politics who are going to be an instrument of their passage to the next experience in life.
You see, now, when I read that quote, that's how my mind started thinking. I was like, okay, because when you look at, you know, how some of the analysis of this election cycle is breaking out, they're saying that the people who embraced Mr. Trump and whom he endorsed did well. And those who did not embrace him and he did not endorse did not do well. And so, I'm saying, okay, so if they, embraced him and he endorsed them and they got in, are they going to march lockstep in line with everything, or are they going to be more moderate or more progressive in bringing their voices and their base to the conversation, you know, to the table on some of these issues? You know, I think this is a wonderful opportunity for the Republican Party in that regard if they open themselves up to that. You agree?
Yeah, yeah.
And also, when we look at the diversity of the field of candidates in the Democratic Party, we don't have something comparable in terms of the field of candidates in the Republican Party in terms of diversity. You know, I was when I was looking at some of the races where Republicans did run a Black American, they did not win, and so it caused me to question, to think, well, Republicans who are not in the Black community ready to have, new Black leadership in the Republican Party. So that was interesting as well. And so I'm thinking, if I had a chance to sit and talk with Mr. McConnell, you know, I would definitely say this is the time. Time has come where we can really help get America on track to be great. Yes. They don't see you nodding your head. You in agreement with me?
Well, I'm nodding my head. I hear that posture, that position, but I think people like McConnell are just too indoctrinated into their way of thinking that what they think is right. And their message is very clear. So, I mean, we heard McConnell at that hearing with the Kavanaugh thing, and those old Republicans, you heard them with so much passion and conviction about what their perception of that hearing or interview, whatever you want to call it, really was about. They believed it was a faith to them that the way that they thought was the only way to think. And that's a hard place to move beyond. And I just don't see it happening. I don't know if that's something we would like to expect to see happen, that more,
cooperation.
Yeah, and what's the word, you know,
reciprocity,
diversity on both sides of the aisle would evolve. But I don't see where it's happening. I don't see where minorities are very welcome because they go against Trump's rhetoric. Trump has certainly presented a anti-people of color diplomacy here, and I don't see where the Republicans are going to move too far beyond that, especially those who are the far right-wing Republicans. And people like Cruz, I mean, how can a man whose wife and mother, I believe it was insulted by this man and welcome him to... See, so that's where the divider comes in, and welcome him to come and, barnstorm for him to be reelected. Where's the respect for self, you know?
Well, you know what? That leads me into what will probably be the last point that we can have a dialogue about, and that is Miss Julia, I think her name is Julia Carey Wong, and she wrote this. She said, "This election cycle saw the emergence of a new trend where family members are denouncing candidacies of one's own family member. In Missouri, a son and daughter of a state assembly candidate, Steve West, opposed his candidacy, identifying him as racist, homophobic, and anti-Semitic. In Utah, 12 relatives of Republican governor candidate Adam Laxalt wrote an op-ed calling him out for phoniness.
Happy Thanksgiving.
And that's just what she said. And then there were 22 other relatives who wrote one supporting him. All right. And then in Arizona, check this one out. 6 of 9 siblings of Republican candidate Paul Gosar starred in a series of attack ads against him. And so West and Laxalt lost, but Gosar won. And so Ms. Wong said, 45 people can look forward to a very interesting Thanksgiving.
Hear, hear.
So, but isn't that, another thing people will be looking at is the emergence of family members. You know, folks used to just, go along to get along or stay quiet or whatever. But now family members are stepping up when people are throwing and telling, you know, your racism is showing, your misogyny is showing, your bigotry is showing, and we see it, and we're going to let other people see it. Yeah. And so we shall see how that plays out going forward. If people who are brought their sheets out will put them back in the closets because their family members are going to call them on it.
Well, it's a major factor, but, I can see some of those politicians looking at their son and say, where do you think the money is coming from to put you through Yale and Harvard and et cetera, et cetera. So there's always that issue, you know. I mean, I think one of the problems that we have in this country is we are not able to really confront what realism and reality about, what does Republicans and Democrats ideals represent really, and what is truth when we hear see an ad depicting their opponent as evil and corrupt and so, and we don't hear the response to that. We just hear each one bad-mouthing the other one. So some people aren't able to see through that. It's not particularly, it's transparent nonsense is what it appears to be to me, but there should be a way in which the truth should be presented as what that person said about the other person is not true, and the facts, which we seem to have a problem digesting facts these days, but the facts don't bear out the rhetoric of the opposition candidate. And I think American people need to be told that, whether they want to hear it or accept it or not. but it should be part of our democracy that our press should be able to take a look at those issues and tell the public what the facts really are in part or in whole.
Well, you know what? Like I said, I think the political science classes will definitely be taking a look at all of this, and we'll see what crop of political strategists comes out of it. Yeah. I'm so glad you stopped by to have this little conversation with me, because, you know, we could go on. There's a whole lot more to talk about, but our time is just about up. And I do want to give a happy birthday shout out. You said your grandson, your son.
My son.
Your son celebrated a birthday this month.
My son was 63 years old.
My. I don't know if he appreciate you telling his age. Don't be telling mine.
Only a number. Only a number.
Well, as long as they think I'm 20 years younger, I'm cool with it. And I have a cousin who celebrated his birthday yesterday, Mr. Dwayne Phillips, and he and a whole bunch of family members, including my mom and dad, he took them all down to Los Cabos. You know, I'm telling you, come on here. That's the rich side of the family.
I hear you. I hear that.
But we shouting him out, and, you know, and many, many happy birthday returns as he celebrates a big, you know, milestone in his years, too. We love you, cousin, and we're just so thankful for you, you know, taking mom and dad with you. And we hope you have many healthy, happy more. We are shouting out one of my best friends, long time, more than half my life friend right now, Reverend Edna, who celebrates her birthday today. I love you, sis. God loves you more, but you know I love you too. And my grandson, he celebrates my second grandson. He celebrates his fifth birthday on tomorrow. And I told him last week, I said, yeah, so you have a birthday next Thursday. And he said, yes, November 8th. So shout out to all of you who are.
One more. My other son, Gary, will be 61 on the 14th. Of this month.
Oh, okay.
So happy birthday also.
Yes. So you have two who are celebrating the same month as my mom did. And then my dad, I have a brother and sister. They both celebrated in October. So, yeah. Well, that means you're broke right about now.
Amen.
Well, listen, beloved, it's about time for us to get out of here. But
been a pleasure.
It's been a delight to have you here with me, my brother. And I just want to say to all of y'all, listen, no matter how dark the sky may look, how gray the day, how low the clouds may hang, there is a bright side out there. It's somewhere. Y'all keep hanging in there. Don't let go. God ain't finished with us yet. All right? And we're going to go out. Oh, my gosh. I got about 60 seconds. I don't even think I'm going to have time to play this. All right. So, listen. Come back. I'll be back, God willing, and saying the same. The creek don't rise. We'll be back on the third Wednesday of November.
Amen.
All right. Tune in for us. If you see me in the street, say, hey, I won't bite. I love you. Love to hear when you've been listening.